Caboo at the Clinton is our monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater. This month, on Thursday, March 10th at 7 p.m., Caboo at the Clinton will show Salt of the Earth. Based on actual events, this film depicts a strike by Mexican-American mine workers in New Mexico. Against a backdrop of social injustice, a family drama is played out by a miner and his wife. Again, that's Salt of the Earth, Thursday, March 10th, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, and welcome to Words and Pictures, your comics and animation show. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And today we're bringing you a special presentation, a conversation between two celebrated graphic novelists, Eisner Award-winning author Craig Thompson, whose works include Blankets and Habibi, and Jean Luen Yang, who currently serves as the Library of Congress's National Ambassador for Young People's Literature. In 2013, Craig and Jean shared the stage at Portland's Wordstock Literary Festival and asked each other about their creative processes and the themes that run through their stories. So, from October 5th, 2013, here is Craig Thompson and Jean Luen Yang in conversation.
Thanks for showing up, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here.
Maybe
we should start by giving a little bit more information about ourselves.
The two books I'm best known for are Blankets and Habibi. All three of my graphic novels I've drawn in Portland, and then I did a travelogue while I was traveling in like 3 months' time. But your new project, Boxers and Saints, which Gene is on tour for right now, it's a two-volume diptych. I don't like that word. It sounds diptych.
Yeah.
Gene Yang's diptych. But it's an epic, you know? It's a true, like, historical epic and very dark. Like, there's it starts similar to Gene's previous work, American Born Chinese, with a certain levity and humor and even sentimentality, like sweetness. But then it goes into some really dark and violent places, and it's pretty overwhelming. I guess my question was, well, how was that transition? Because I can relate a bit going from Blankets, which was very light, to Habibi, which was a darker space. And maybe we should actually, before we get into discussing that, actually say what Boxers and Saints is.
Sure.
And if you could give just that sort of brief description of the Boxer Rebellion for people who don't know their Chinese history.
Sure. The Boxers and Saints is two books about the Boxer Rebellion, which is this war that was fought on Chinese soil in the year 1900. And I really didn't know very much about this incident before I started on this project. The way I first became interested in the Boxer Rebellion was in 2000, John Paul II canonized a whole bunch of saints of China, 87 of which were ethnically Chinese. I grew up in a Chinese Catholic community, and my home church was super excited about this because this is the first time that the Roman Catholic Church, that this deeply Western church, had acknowledged Chinese citizens in this way. So they had like all sorts of special masses and parties and festivals. Well, I looked into the lives of a lot of these Chinese saints, and I discovered that many of them had been martyred during the Boxer Rebellion. And the more I learned about the Boxer Rebellion, the more fascinated I became with it. I felt like, the canonization was actually very controversial. When immediately after the Vatican's announcement, the Chinese government issued a letter of protest saying that the Roman Catholic Church was actually honoring these people who were traitors to their own culture. Back then, if you were a Chinese Christian, you were seen as somebody who turned your back on Chinese culture in favor of this foreign faith, right? So within the incident of the Boxer Rebellion, I felt like there was this embodiment of a struggle that I felt within my own life from time to time between Eastern and Western ways of seeing people and seeing the world, and Eastern way and Western understandings in general.
Which in a way is what your previous book is about too. American Born Chinese is a much more small personal story about being a child of Chinese immigrants. growing up in America and trying to resolve those two parts of yourself, like, or learning to, I guess, because identifying more as American and being sort of ashamed, perhaps, of the Chinese ancestry, and learning to resolve that within you. But it's continued on another landscape with Boxers and Saints, which is about Catholicism and China and, like, the conflict between these two cultures, but also how do you carry those two parts within yourself? Are they in conflict?
I actually kind of feel like, I didn't do this consciously, but I kind of feel like I'm following you in my career. So you had a Blanket, which was a very personal story, and it was really about a minority culture and a more mainstream culture, right? It was about this tension between this fairly conservative Christian culture that you grew up in and a wider mainstream culture that you later sort of exited into. And then that was kind of like, so for me, it was American More Chinese was kind of like that. I talk a lot about the tension between growing up as a minority, like as an Asian American within a predominantly white neighborhood. And then your second book, you sort of went outside of yourself and you explored this culture and this belief system that was pretty foreign to you, but you were able to find fairly personal connections into it. That's what it felt like to me, anyways. And then I think for me too, like, in doing Boxers and Saints, I realized how Americanized I am. Like, the book is set in late 1800s China, but in order for me to do it, I really had to find these ways of entering into the story. So I have a question for you. Like, I think the Boxer Rebellion is fairly removed from my own life, but I still have some cultural connection into it. How are you able to find, like, I'm assuming you don't have any Muslim relatives, right?
Not that I know of.
Into, like, this Muslim culture.
Well, I mean, the Christianity connection, foremost. I mean, that was the earliest discovery, is just seeing how much overlap there was in my own Christian upbringing compared to any Muslim I met. You know, especially when I think the book was first maybe born in when I was traveling a bit. I spent a month in Morocco, and during that time, you know, I had a lot of conversations about faith and family and all those sort of topics with people, and it was just really apparent, like, oh, like, you know, and I'm ashamed to admit at that point in my life, I didn't really have any Muslim friends here in the States. You know, I was very isolated, I guess, in that sense. And that was a cool thing about working on Habibi, as I sort of drew those people into my life. And the more conversations we had, it was very obvious that we had far more connections in the belief systems and family life and in our childhoods. Same stories shape these religions, you know? So in that sense, it was easy. My biblical knowledge that I grew up with was just a really easy entry point into accessing the reading the Quran for the first time. And thinking about these different prophets, it's all the same prophets other than Muhammad. So there's just one extra prophet to add on to the long laundry list of all the others. But also I had the advantage with Habibi that I was kind of playing fast and loose with a lot of details. Like, it's a fairy tale. It's made up, you know. It's not specific to any location or time period, where you're doing something, not to draw the attention away from Habibi, but you're doing something that's very meticulously researched, where you have to be precise about, you know, you're not even writing historical fiction, right? You're writing, it's a historical account. I guess you're emotionally embodying these. Okay, so that would be the genre.
Yeah, one of the things that I was able to do with Boxers and Saints is the Boxer Rebellion was, the two sides of this war were, on one side it was the European soldiers, European missionaries, and Chinese Christians. And then on the other side was this army of poor, they were basically Chinese farm boys, right? They were these poor Chinese farm boys, they were illiterate, they were, they had these really crappy lives, they had really short life expectancies. Their communities had just gone through these really devastating droughts, so there was nothing for them to farm. And these boys believed that they could call the Chinese gods down from the skies, and these Chinese gods would empower them with superpowers, and then they would use these superpowers to fight off this foreign incursion. One of the things that I was able to do with Boxers and Saints is the Boxer movement actually started among the poor in China, and because it started among the poor, history of the poor is often unwritten, it often goes unrecorded. So really, the most of the documentation that we have about the Boxer Rebellion shows up after they make their way into the main cities and start confronting the Europeans and the Chinese who were in power. So for their origins, there was a lot of space for me to just use my imagination. I read up a bunch of books about people's theories as to how the Boxer Rebellion started, and then I created this one fictional character who ended up being one of my protagonists, and I just weaved in these people's theories into his life story. So it's very much fiction. For Habibi though, you know, for boxers, I felt like I still had to create like a cartoon version of a real place in a real time, right? I had to create a cartoon version of China in the late 1800s. I was wondering for Habibi why you decided to create just this completely fictional setting that pulls from history and it also pulls from the real world, but it's still ultimately fictional.
I mean, it was more fun that way, but also I didn't feel like it was about any specific place or time. That was part of the point of the story, is that I wanted people to see past those barriers. And you know, I never thought it was about, I mean, I really entered that story on an emotional level with the characters first. And everything else around them, I was just sort of like drawing from some research for my own pleasure. Like I could follow my muse, wander down a path of research, and maybe sew some of that into the story, but it was just textures. It was, you know, in some ways surface, a lot of that research. And the essence was, it was really just their relationship. So, and that's another thing that made the book easy to write, other than that my sort of Christian background was just, you know, like, I just had this, like, sort of parental relationship with these characters. That's what I get with every book, really, is I feel like I don't really like making comics. Like, it's hard work, and, you know, like, it's tedious. You have to do it day in and day out. But I always feel this bond with my characters where I'm, like, accountable to them, to give them life and to, like, see out their story on paper. I feel it again with my new project. Like, every day that I'm like, oh, I don't know if I could do this another day. I'm like, but these guys, you know, like, I owe it to them. I have to see this through.
Yeah, I don't know if I feel as paternal with my character.
Because you have real kids.
Yeah, that might be it. I have, yeah. Yeah, there is a competition, though, between my fictional creations and my biological kids. So they're constantly, like, knocking at my studio door. Well, you know, that brings up another theme. I think that resonates strongly in both of our, both of our books, is the theme of family. I think even, you know, in Blankets, I think family is a very strong theme. I think in your first big book, in Chunky Rice, in Goodbye Chunky Rice, there's this theme of family, even though the main characters are, you know, biologically related to one another. There's definitely this bond that's as deep as family. And Habibi also, it seems like it's about these two orphan kids who are ultimately looking for family. So what do you think that, like, where do you think that impulse comes from, and why do you think it seems to be a really rich well?
It's not a conscious thing. I think it's just a slow sort of therapy process. So if you were going into psychotherapy, you would start, actually probably in psychotherapy, you start by talking about your parental relationships, because that's where all your like emotional, spiritual problems sort of originate from. But I think like in the creative process, for me, like the very first step was doing a book that was about the stepping out on your own, the individualist sort of experience. I recently watched Close Encounters of the Third Kind recently, because I'm in this sort of sci-fi nerd phase, especially old 70s, 80s sci-fi. And it's I don't know if anyone's watched it recently. It's a very selfish story because it's about kind of leaving behind your family and stuff to express yourself or to pursue something that has meaning to you. So the Richard Dreyfuss character is obsessed with these UFOs and kind of abandons his family for them. Chunky Rice, I feel like, was that first step where, like, this is about leaving things that you're close to, your comforts, your friends, to pursue something for yourself. Blankets is more about finding a connection in another person for the first time, a connection that ultimately that fades, but it's still, like, sort of, you know, that carrying that magic with you beyond the sort of lifespan of the relationship. Habibi is more about adult relationship, where you actually have to work at something, and you really have to stick with something and struggle with it to heal the broken parts of yourself. And you can only really do that in a relationship with another. But it's something I'm processing through my work.
You're listening to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Konser. And today we're bringing you a conversation between graphic novelists Craig Thompson and Jean Luen Yang, recorded October 5th, 2013, at Portland's Wordstock Literary Festival.
What about you? The new book, Boxers and Saints, is... There's a theme, actually, I guess, with in the Saints story, and I can't remember the name of that protagonist, but she really abandons her family and her culture to sort of find a new sort of community with the Catholic sort of invaders, you know? And what did that mean to you?
Well, So the reason why Boxers and Saints is two volumes is that in my research into the historical incident, I had a really hard time figuring out who the good guys were and the bad guys were. I felt really sympathetic to both these young men, these boxers, who believed that they could call the Chinese gods down from the skies, and also to the Chinese Christians that they killed. So for the second volume, the one where the Chinese Christians are actually the protagonists, the main protagonist is a young girl who eventually converts to Catholicism. And she's based on somebody in my own family, one of my relatives. I have a relative who was born under a bad luck day, according to the traditional Chinese calendar. And she had this little sister that was born under a good luck day. So their grandfather loved the little sister, but hated this relative of mine. And whenever the grandfather had these treats, he would give them to the little sister, but not to my relative. Later as an adult, she converts to Catholicism. And even though she never connects these childhood experiences with her conversion, to me it seems like the conversion is pretty clear. You know, she wasn't able to find a place for herself in this traditional Chinese worldview. So she ended up looking to the stories of the others. She ended up looking to these Western religious stories for her reflection. And I think in my research, when I looked at a lot of what was written about these early Chinese converts to Christianity, I found that dynamic all over the place. You know, a lot of them were people who just had a hard time finding family, finding connection within the culture that they were born into. So they ended up using these foreign stories to create a family for themselves.
Well, that was something I was curious about, that we both grew up Christian, but different brands of Christianity, at least I suspect. You being a Chinese-American Catholic, my parents are sort of white, working-class, born-again evangelicals. And I really think, like, the born-again movement is really about obliterating your past. Like, it's about, like, it really attracts people with troubled pasts that just want to reboot and start from scratch. So I never had any connection to my extended family. I never heard stories about, like, my parents' families. I didn't really even know my grandparents. It was definitely like they became born-again Christians in their 20s, and they left all their friends and family behind to just reboot. And I think, like, born-again movement really attracts, like, people, you know, like junkies and people with really bad histories that need that hope, you know? Whereas when I think of immigrant Christian communities, it is a lot about community and a connection to your culture and your history and your past. But at the same time, it seems like that there could be an opposition there because the Christianity is not native necessarily to the motherland, wherever that might be. Yeah. It was something imposed by foreign invaders. So how do you reconcile those two things? Like, what does it mean to be a you know, like, Chinese American Catholic?
Sure. I think, you know, I don't really know the relationship between Christianity and other cultures very well, but for Christianity and Chinese culture, I think it's a very complex relationship. Like, you know, just over 100 years ago, embracing Christianity was a way of turning your back on Chinese culture, and different people had different reasons for doing that. But then in this country, especially early on, Chinese kids weren't welcome in American public schools, so a lot of Christian missionaries, especially Protestant missionaries, would go into Chinatowns and establish these schools, and then churches would grow up around these schools. And eventually those churches became these cultural hubs. It wasn't just about the faith, it was also about the culture. I think that was definitely true of the church that I grew up in, you know? Like the version of Catholicism that was practiced there was very Chinese. Basically, like for instance, there's a Catholic holiday called the Day of the Dead. And at my church, the way we practiced the Day of the Dead, the way we celebrated the Day of the Dead, was basically the way Chinese people have celebrated their ancestors for thousands of years. It was the exact same thing. So it wasn't necessarily about these Western doctrines. It was also about preserving some sort of a connection into Eastern culture. But then as an adult, like when I was a kid, it just seemed like it meshed together. Anytime people were talking about God and Jesus, they're almost always going in Chinese, right? But then as an adult, I realized that there are these different points at which these things would conflict. I remember actually going to a retreat, and the priest that was running the retreat actually said to us, right, we were all in high school, and he actually said to us, you don't necessarily all have to go to college. You can be a successful person without going to college. And all our parents just freaked out. But he was talking about how people's callings can be diverse, right? And there's not necessarily this one path. Whereas
well, that's a major difference from my culture too, because I come from like working class kind of white trash culture where nobody went to college, which is the opposite of like Asian immigrant communities where you're like, required to achieve academically.
For Asian immigrants, there's one path that everybody kind of agrees on to success. Yeah, so it's...
So where does cartoonist fit into that? Doctor, lawyer, cartoonist.
Well, how did your parents react to you wanting to be a cartoonist? Especially coming from... I know that there are certain... It's definitely not true for all evangelicals, but there are certain strains of evangelicalism that definitely have a bias against image making.
No, they're very pro... They wanted me to do, like, the Veggie Tales. Have you seen those?
Okay,
the CGI vegetables. I mean, I've talked about this before publicly that, like, part of the reason I connected with comics as a medium was because it was below my parents' censorship radar, because all the media in the house was monitored, so, like, movies, television, music, all that stuff was strict censorship. But comics were just kids' stuff, so they were never looked at. So my brother and I, who are both very obsessed with comics, were able to access a lot edgier sort of personal stories in there than any other medium. So I really imprinted for that reason. But I also think the working class thing, I think comics is a working class art form, you know? It's like, we didn't grow up in a cultured literary family. There wasn't access to the arts and literature, but you know, we had the Sunday funnies, you know? So that was like really the first visual medium that I could connect with. I had that long before we had a black and white television, you know? So comics for me were like sort of they are working class, and my parents were supportive of drawing, and they never had any expectations on us in terms of achievement, like, because I literally did not know anyone that went to college as a kid, so it was never assumed that you would go to college. In fact, my parents were of the sort of Tea Party variety of people that don't like education, you know, like they discourage that. That can only pollute your mind, you know. You only have one book you need to study, that's the Bible. So you know, at a certain point, I think my parents were like, oh, he has no ambition, you know? And my dad started talking to me about plumbing, because that's what his whole career was. But that's about the only thing they imposed on me. It's like, maybe you should be a plumber, like Dad, you know?
Plumbing is actually a really good profession.
Yeah, society needs plumbing.
Yeah, no.
Absolutely. I think plumbing shows up in all my books. There's a scatological element, but there's also this water crisis. I think really the sort of importance and sort of shortage of water was always pounded into my head as a kid. My dad was really obsessed with water.
That actually makes a lot of sense, because one of the things you're most awesome at is drawing water. All of my cartoonist friends, whenever they need to draw some scene with water, they go, pull out our Craig Thompson book, take a look at how he does it.
That's so weird. I've never heard that.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Among all my cartoonist friends, you're the reference for water.
Huh. Weird.
Yeah. Well, now you know. You know, you should actually probably do some sort of a how to draw water tutorial. I think a lot of it's...
In my later years, I will put out, my academic book,
You know, I had read somewhere that, if you're willing to talk about this, I'd read somewhere that blankets was your way of coming out to your parents that you were leaving their faith tradition. Is that true?
Yeah, that was true. Because another thing, I'm also from the Midwest, where sort of stoic Midwesterners, where there isn't a lot of verbal communication. There's very little at all, actually. Have you ever seen like an Alexander Payne film about Schmidt with Jack Nicholson? You know, like where everyone just sits at the dinner table and, you know, there's no conversation. You don't talk about feelings or what's going on internally. That's probably another reason why I was drawn to comics as an art form. I don't know, it was just a way for me to express things, you know? And it was the only vehicle I had to get these things to my parents. When I was working on blankets, I already knew that it would upset my parents, so I couldn't show it to them for that reason, because I already have enough forces in myself to close me down, or, you know, that make me want to burn a project. I didn't want to bring other people's opinions into that. So I knew I had to wait until the book was finished.
I think that's one of the things that I most appreciate about comics is how it is an outsider's medium. I remember when I, like in the 80s, you know, this was the one thing that you could hide. We didn't have iPods, you could hide a comic inside of a textbook, you know. So that's actually how I started buying comics, is my friend and I, we figured out that we could get our parents to drop us off at the library, and then we could walk 20 minutes to the comic book store, we could buy all these comics from the corner bin, and then come back to the library and check out these giant books to hide our comics. And so our parents were like, why are you so into Egyptology? So I think that's always been, and historically, if you look at comics, you know, it's always attracted the outsiders. And in the beginning, it was these poor Jewish kids who grew up in the ghettos of New York. And then I think a lot of Asian Americans are attracted to comics in the same way.
I'm curious about that, and I wish we had more time. We're almost wrapping up now, but like, we didn't even get to talk about the overlap in like Buddhism and Christianity.
The
overlap that you explore in your book between Jesus and, I think it's Guanyin, who's this goddess of compassion, and sort of this Chinese pantheon or whatever. But I mean, like the sort of edicts of these sort of like Chinese warriors are the same as a sort of Sermon on the Mount, sort of like, you know, compassion for the weak and the poor, and respect your parents and do not lust, all these things. I'm like, oh, those are good rules to live your life by. And they cross over in so many different cultures and religion. I don't, you know.
Yeah. I think something in Boxers and Saints that I explore is the universality of religious imagery. So within Christianity, the crucified hand, the hand with a hole in it, is seen as a sign of compassion, right? And then within Buddhism, a hand with an eye in it is seen as a sign of compassion. It's a symbol of the goddess of compassion, the eye.
And the same in Islam too.
When I reread Habibi in preparation for this, I was really struck. You talked about the hand of Fatima and the hand of Miriam, how it's a hand with an eye on it. It's just interesting that's like a universal symbol, right?
Yeah, that is the interesting thing about Habibi and Boxers and Saints, is it is that same sort of theme about the universality of these sort of spiritual concerns.
Yeah.
It's unity, it's not separation between the faiths.
Yeah.
All right, I guess, thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you.
You've been listening to Words and Pictures. I'm S.W. Konser, and today we've been bringing you a special presentation, a conversation between two celebrated graphic novelists, Eisner Award-winning author Craig Thompson, whose works include Blankets and Habibi, and Jean Luen Yang, who currently serves as the Library of Congress's National Ambassador for Young People's Literature. Craig and Jean shared the stage at Portland's Wordstock Literary Festival on October 5th, 2013. You can find an archived version of this show on our webpage, kboo.fm/wordsandpictures, and follow us on Twitter at Words and Picture. Thanks for listening, and remember to support your community radio.
Now the KBOO News at noon for Thursday, March 10th, 2016. On this day in history, March 10th, 1957, the oldest continuously inhabited community on the North American continent ended. The Celilo Falls was a tribal fishing area on the border between Oregon and Washington on the Columbia River. This series of waterfalls and cascades were the home of native fishing villages for 15,000 years. On March 10, 1957, it all ended as the steel and concrete floodgates closed on the Dalles Dam, and a multi-millennial way of life ended in a matter of hours. Tribal members had witnessed the opening of the dam with their backs turned. An informal gathering of friends will meet tonight to remember Celilo at the Bison Coffee House on Northeast Cully Boulevard from 5:30 to 7 p.m. A year ago, a fishing ban on sardines was enacted to help the sardine population. The news is not good today. New research by the federal government has shown that the population has dwindled further since the fishing ban. According to the report, the sardine population is only 7% of what it was in 2007, and fishermen say it will take a decade to revive the fishery. The sardine population had been worth more than $8 million to Oregon's economy. Jesus might have been in favor of weed. Six Christian brothers in Colorado have developed a marijuana extract they call Charlotte's Web. They entered the medical marijuana marketplace, linking their theology with marijuana. The marijuana extract has been used to help epileptic children. Over 500 families have relocated to Colorado in order to give their children this extract. The Stanley brothers, with their evangelical theology, are changing ideas for many religious people that marijuana is not evil, but in the words of Joel Stanley, marijuana is a part of God's purpose.